All right, we're going without the music this evening. Welcome to the 50th episode of Rubber Guard Radio. I am your host, KZ. On the line, I have my tag team partner and soulmate, God's gift to pro wrestling, Alex Saint. What's going on, brother? Happy 50th.
Hey, what's going on? What's going on?
Chilling, waiting for the champ to call in.
The champ is here. Da-da-da-da-da.
Yeah, well, you know, he's one of the few legitimate champions. You know, I really don't count Vince as champions because, you know, really, come on. How many guys do they actually work? Four, five guys total?
Orton's pretty damn good. Orton's pretty
good.
Orton Taker is a champion.
Yeah, but I don't know. I just don't. I consider them an entertainment company, and they're not a wrestling company anymore, as far as I'm concerned. But that's I'm old school, man. So
I was actually watching the second One Night Stand show, and I was watching the Orton Angle match, and Orton's great.
they're really putting the screws to them. They're really putting everything behind them. You know, because I was watching Law & Order SVU on Monday, and it's on at 8 o'clock before Raw. And starting at 8:30, they drop in little commercials about Raw, and it was just Randy Orton. Just Randy Orton. And it's like,
I have to say, you know, when he got his original title run as a babyface, it just wasn't – I don't know what the deal was, if he wasn't ready or if he doesn't work as a face. But, my God, as a heel champion, he's awesome, and I enjoy watching him.
He sure got that soccer kick over, didn't he?
Yeah, he did. I mean, that's the thing. I mean, like, it's you get things over by continually doing it on TV, you know?
Mm-hmm. Yeah, I have to agree. Well, go ahead and drop the news about Carl Anderson.
From a very reliable source, I guess you could say. Didn't we already talk about that, how Carl got a one-year deal over in New Japan?
I haven't heard it mentioned at all, but...
Yeah, I haven't heard it mentioned at all.
Yeah.
Well, congratulations to Carl Anderson. He definitely deserves bigger and better. And he's a great, great talent. And apparently he's going to be able to apply his trade over in New Japan. I've only seen one match of his from New Japan against Rhino. And I knew he was good, but when I saw him against Rhino, I was like, damn, that guy is really good.
Well, I'm going to go with him and Bernard as the next tag chance. That's just me.
Well, whatever they decide to do with Carl.
I would rather have Carl teaming with what's the guy's name? Tomko. But, you know, Tomko's gone. He's in IGF or whatever the hell Inoki's spinoff group is.
Well, I found out about it yesterday. The sad news in the world of pro wrestling, Suwama beat Tanahashi for the Champions Carnival.
Yes, I didn't want to break your heart there, but
yeah, that hurt my feelings.
Oh,
that's all right.
I forgot to bring this up. This episode of Rubber Guard Radio is brought to you by our sponsor, WrestleWarehouse.com. If you need DVDs, lucha masks, T-shirts, WWE swag. Jeff even carries that stuff. You know, he's got to get paid. So www.wrestlewarehouse.com. Tell them that KZ or Alex Saint from Rubber Guard Radio sent you. And the other sponsor would be FogCityWrestling.com. Saturday night, I'm itching, brother. Doors are at 6, bell time at 7. I suggest you get there about 5. I'm not gonna let the cat out of the bag how many tickets are sold, but I have a good idea how many. I'm just saying, get there early. That's all I'm gonna say to you guys out there in the Bay Area. Get there early. It's gonna be another fun show, and this show is this is their third show, and they're without a big name. Per se. I mean, they have Reno on top. A Black Pearl is on top in the main event, but they don't have Rikishi this time. So they're hoping that the angles that they ran in the last show, you know, are strong enough. And I personally think they are. No Gangrel this time. Gangrel will be in for a tag match next month. So that's what's going on this
Have we talked
weekend.
About that Kung Lee Frank Shamrock fight yet?
Oh, wow. I was waiting on you, brother. I saw it before you.
Oh, my God, that fight. I've seen it twice in the past couple of days. It was actually, I was actually with someone last night who generally I don't find, you know, MMA fans, like hardcore MMA fans. You generally don't meet them. I actually met a guy last night, and I actually met a hardcore MMA fan, and he actually was aware of, you know, all the fights or whatever, and he hadn't seen the fight, so I watched it again with him last night, and he was just putting over about how awesome the fight was. I mean,
oh shit.
Well, after
hey,
we
dude.
Saw it.
Hey, hold on just a second. This has been announced by Fog City Wrestling, the world-famous SoCal indie legend Disco Machine will be in the house this Saturday. I'm stoked, man.
Oh,
Disco
wow.
Disco Machine.
The wrestling.
Huh.
That's great. Disco's awesome.
Oh, boy. Yeah, I'm sorry to cut you off there. I just got a bulletin posted by the people who run Fog City, and I was like, I'm looking down. I'm like, okay, I knew all these people were going to be here. And, oh, Disco Machine.
Oh, wow.
Wow, that's going to be cool. Awesome,
yeah,
awesome,
awesome.
Awesome. But anyway, Frank and Kung Lee. Now, that was a – all right, that's fight of the year so far.
I definitely would say it is, too. I mean, that fight was just amazing.
Yeah, it was good stuff. And –
No.
Let's see. We have a caller here from the 858. Whom am I speaking with?
Who are you waiting to hear from?
The champ is here.
What's going on, guys?
How you doing, Adam? Welcome to
Very
the show.
Very good, man. I'm a little late. I apologize. I got home a little late from the gym.
Oh, it's all good. At least you're going to the gym.
Yes, yes, indeed. And now I'm
awesome.
Drinking a beer, so that probably doesn't help.
Well, you know. I am on the line with the NWA World Heavyweight Champion, Scrap Daddy, Adam Pierce, excuse me.
Whatever works.
Welcome to Rubber Guard, brother. How you doing tonight?
I'm well. I appreciate it. How are you guys tonight?
Oh, kind of quiet tonight, actually. Not a lot of news other than your boy Carl Anderson latching on with New Japan.
Yes.
Cool.
I actually talked to him yesterday. He's doing good. He's doing well. He's happy. Making a little bit of money, which doesn't hurt, and, you know, just doing what the machine gun needs to do.
Yeah. Couldn't happen to a better guy.
Yeah, that's true. Absolutely. He deserves it. He's worked hard, and, you know, he came from Cincinnati out to California to try and make things happen, and fortunately met the right people, and now he's kind of seeing some of the benefits of that hard work, and I, for one, couldn't be happier for the guy. Like, he's probably one of my best friends in wrestling, and he definitely deserves it.
Well, Mr. Pierce, I would like to go into by saying that I'm currently training here in San Diego, and that part of my training is that I get to set up rings for Mr. Jeff Dino at the SoCal Pro Shows. And then along with paying my dues or whatever, I see it as a great honor because at least once a month, at least if I'm lucky, I get to see one of the best pro wrestlers, in my opinion, in the world, in Scrap Iron, Adam Pierce. Wrestle for SoCal Pro Wrestling. And then there's two matches I would like to bring up in particular because they both had different dynamics. The first one, I believe, took place in January. It was you against SoCal Crazy, who's a local San Diego wrestler. And
right.
then at the time, I thought that was one of the best matches I had seen live. And I would like to know some of your thoughts about that match.
You know, I didn't really have any expectations going in, only because I had never wrestled with SoCal Crazy before. And to be perfectly honest, I'd only seen him in probably one or two matches, and it's kind of hard to gauge, you know, what a guy has to offer based on watching one or two matches, you know, on a small show. So I didn't really know what to expect, although he's always been very humble and always worked hard and is a hell of a nice guy. So I just went in there with kind of, you know, eyes wide open, just saying, hey, you know, let's do what we can do do what we can do to put on the best show. And fortunately, I think that he and I have decent chemistry. So it came off well for the first time for two guys being in the ring together. So I'm looking forward to the next one, and I think he's definitely got potential. I wouldn't be surprised in the next couple of years to see him on some bigger shows, and I'd like to see him travel more. And he and I have talked about that, kind of get it out of the rut of of staying local and working out in different areas and especially working different people and experiencing what other guys have to offer and how different it can be in different areas. I mean, you're only going to get better by working more people. So I enjoyed the match, and I assume and fully anticipate and liking our next one here coming up in, what, a couple of weeks.
Yeah, it's the next show, Saturday, April 26th. And then I'm not just putting this match over because he's one of my trainers and you're one of my favorite wrestlers. This match I'm very, very anxiously looking forward to. And that one-year anniversary show that SoCal Pro Wrestling's putting out, it has an awesome lineup front to back. And if you're anywhere within an hour radius of Oceanside, you definitely need to make your way up there to see the show. And then at the last SoCal Pro Wrestling show, it was a different type of match. But in 2008, I didn't think I could see a wrestling match where the fans, because, I mean, people know you're involved with the National Wrestling Alliance and that Ricky Mandel isn't exactly involved with the National Wrestling Alliance. But it seemed to me like all the fans in Oceanside honestly believe that Ricky Mandel is going to beat you for the belt. And I just have to say that was amazing what you and Ricky were able to pull off that night. What were some of your thoughts about that match?
You know what? It was kind of the similar dynamic from the standpoint that, again, I had never wrestled with Ricky in the past and had only seen him on a couple of different shows. Everyone had been telling me how talented they thought he could be and how good he could be and that he just needed me in the right situation. So I just kind of went in there because I wasn't originally booked for the date. I was supposed to be out of town and my date fell through and I let, you know, Jeff Dino know, hey, I'm going to be around. If you've got a slot, I'd love to come down. If not, that's fine because it was short notice. And he said, well, how about working with Ricky Mandel? And I not to disrespect Ricky at all, I said, are you sure you want me to come down and pay me to do that? And he said, yeah, I think it would be good for Ricky. And I said, well, if you want to do it, I mean, let's do it. And I couldn't have been happier because, one, another guy eager to work, eager to learn, and fortunately I seem to be able to work with younger guys, and in fact, I have the most fun in the ring working with younger guys because they listen and they're eager just to do something different, you know. And we put in some time. I think we went about 20 minutes, and that might be the longest match he's had. And it was just a situation where I just kind of felt him out and said, you know, Ricky, what are you good at? What do you like to do? What do you do that looks good? What do you do that you think this crowd will buy? Because going into it, it's like you said, I didn't know that it would be believable that Ricky, you know, I hate having the matches where you know who's going to win. And I felt like this was a perfect example of that for the people because if they don't have the opportunity to suspend this belief, it's harder to get them to buy into what you're doing in the match. It's harder to get them to react the way you want them to. So we had to try and set the tone early that Ricky was a threat. And so we just kind of worked around it. I mean, the whole match pretty much was shining what Ricky's good at. And the way the match was put over the way it was because of how he sells. And I was super impressed with that because in today's independent wrestling, and especially, and this goes for Ring of Honor or even the bigger NWA shows I've worked, it seems like babyfaces today forgot how to sell. And that's all Ricky did in that match was sell his ass off, and the people bought it. And when you've got sympathy from the crowd on a babyface, it makes my job 100 times easier. I don't have to do anything, really, and they're going to react for it because they just want to see Ricky make that comeback. And fortunately, that's exactly what happened. And by the end of the match, you know, Ricky even said, he goes, I can't believe that they were reacting for the things that I were doing the way they were. And I said, you know what, man, the credit goes to you because you made them believe. And he really did. And I think he took a step forward. And, you know, if he works like that all the time, I think it's, again, another guy who in 2 or 3 years I wouldn't be surprised to see on bigger shows. And he would deserve it, too, because you couldn't ask for a more humble guy.
Well, I'm up here in Northern California, and I wasn't able to see the show. But I did get a DVD of it this week, and I saw the February and the March SoCal Pro shows. And I was really, really impressed with what you did with Ricky. And the thing is, he is a viable challenger, even though he's 0-10.
Right. Oh. Right. I mean, and it's just, you know, if you can, if, again, make the people believe, you know, give them a story that's easy to follow. That's it.
Mm-hmm. I mean, it had me hooked, and I knew the result. But I was still sitting on my couch, and I was hooked. And, you know, to be honest, that's going to be my push for SoCal Match of the Year. But that's just my opinion. But I have not seen January yet. I will be seeing January next week, so we'll see. It's either one of those. And I'm not putting it over because you're on the show or because Jeff is one of my sponsors. I enjoy the work and I enjoy the matches.
Well, I appreciate it.
Okay, cool. go ahead, Alex.
Okay, I was going to say I want to get into a little bit of your history, but I'm going to go about it in kind of, I guess, a unique way.
Sure.
What were your thoughts about WrestleMania 24, and what are some of the things that really stood out to you?
You know what? And this is going to probably put some heat on me. I didn't even see it. And I regret that only because I had some family obligations that day. Normally, I don't watch a lot of wrestling on TV nowadays, mostly, honestly, because I don't like what I see on TV. I kind of have the stigma of being old school, and I guess that's kind of true because that's what I like to watch. I was interested in seeing WrestleMania 24 because one of my best friends in the business, Punk, had a really high-profile match, obviously, which ended up winning, which is good for him. And then, obviously, Ric Flair's match against Shawn Michaels, which I'll end up seeing, but I couldn't see it live, unfortunately. From what I've heard, and I watched the Hall of Fame ceremony, and I talked to Punk like probably 15 minutes after his match, it was just a super emotional time for all those guys backstage. Cole Cabana was there, too. He played one of the paparazzi for Melina, which is cool. I don't know if you guys know that, but I was instrumental, and we were all together running the roads, you know, for 10 years before those guys had blown up. So it's really, like, I live vicariously through their experiences and their successes, so it's great. I need to actually sit down and see more than, like, the last 3 minutes of that Ric Flair match to really appreciate it. I can tell you that based on how emotional it was and what the response has been from wrestling fans, I'll probably sit there with, you know, as much tears as anyone else flowing because, like most guys who put on a pair of boots, Ric Flair is one of the biggest reasons why I even do it. So it's just a matter of finding the time to sit down and watch it, but I need to, and I feel like a retard for not, honestly.
So when did you first encounter CM Punk and Colt Cabana?
CM Punk, I was probably in for a year and a half, maybe 2 years tops, training out of a camp called Pro Wrestling International on the north side of Chicago. And this would have been 98, roughly. And Punk was working with, and I hate to say this now, but it's true, so I'll say it. He was working with pretty much a backyard group in the area. And him and a couple of the guys that worked with that group were looking into actually being trained by, you know, obviously reputable professionals, and they ended up coming about to that camp a couple of times, and that's where I first ran into Punk. But didn't really get to know him at that point until Ace Steel and Danny Dominion opened their school, which was called the Steel Domain, also on the north side of Chicago. And so I was there finishing up, and I was probably there for another 2 years just trying to polish my game while I was working small independents in the Midwest, Wisconsin, Minnesota, Michigan, Indiana, stuff like that. And then Punk and Cabana joined the school both in the same week. So from that point on, I mean, it was pretty much me, Punk, Cabana, Ace Steel, and Danny Dominion running the roads. Wherever we could get booked, we would go. And that carried on until about 2000 when I moved out here. And then, of course, those guys went on to pretty much work everywhere while I was out here. And really honed their craft, and fortunately we keep in touch. I probably get texts or emails or phone calls from those guys two or three times a week. So it's definitely one of those lasting relationships, and it's like whatever territory, wherever we're working, you know, we're always putting over the fact that we're all from the same Chicago crew. So it's definitely a good thing and a cool thing.
Well, a friend of mine that lives in Wisconsin, ACW Mark, he emailed me today, and he's obviously a very huge Adam Pearce fan, and he sent me a couple questions to ask you.
Sure.
What are your memories of working for MAW in Milwaukee and ACW in Wisconsin?
MAW in Milwaukee was Mid-American Wrestling run by Carmine DiSpirito, who, coincidentally, Carmine DiSpirito is now one of the matchmakers for NWA Pro out of Southern California. So I've known Carmine for probably 12 or 13 years now. That's pretty much where I got. That was like the first place that gave me work outside of my training camp when I first broke in when I was 17. So I always have to hold Carmine in high regard because you know, that first promoter who thinks you're worth anything and is willing to throw you a couple bucks to do, you know, what you've been training to do, you kind of always hold a special spot in your heart for. So I would say I had my first good matches for Carmen, because up until probably a year and a half, 2 years in the business, you know, you're just working with guys and listening and just doing what you're told. And Carmen was really the first guy to give me an opportunity to kind of do what I wanted to do and to kind of, you know, try and fail at things and learn from my mistakes and get better and work with different talent. He got me my first European tour. I mean, there's just so many memories of working for Mid-American. And then ACW was based in Green Bay, so that's just another 2.5 hours north of Milwaukee. And that was owned and run by a guy named Mike Mercury. And I had a blast working up there because they always had hot crowds, and they would draw 700-800 people into this indoor – it was like an indoor – I want to say sand volleyball pit, but they, you know, you've seen like these indoor soccer arenas and whatnot. It was basically that, but they did volleyball, and they had a bar, and they would have bands in there and whatnot, and they would just pack them in. And so like every 3 weeks to a month, they'd have a show, and it was all local guys, you know. Ken Kennedy got his start there, so I've known him since he broke in, and of course Punk and Cabana were working there, and I had some really good matches
too.
Austin Aries was working there when he first broke in. Yeah, he worked there.
Sean Devary,
all those guys. I mean, it's good stuff, brother. I feel really old sometimes when I look at the guys who I've been around when they first started. I mean, even out here when I first came to California, and Samoa Joe was only working for like a year, and look at him now. And it's just funny, and it makes you feel real old. But those two promotions were awesome, and I had some really good matches in Green Bay with a guy named Dino Bambino who just vanished off the face of the earth, but it could have been really good. And he worked for IWA Mid-South and did some things. But, yeah, those were great times. I wouldn't have passed it up. I mean, again, hot crowds, and especially in the late 90s, things were easier to do. You had some what you call, you know, your internet marks or smarks, but and you know, everyone's a wrestling fan, including myself, but it just seems like it was easier then. But whatever, we move on and we go forward.
Okay, now, since we're discussing those gentlemen, do you have any road stories? You know, traveling with Punk, Cabana, Ace, Dominion, Dave Frazek, and Chuck E. Smooth. Lots of names I haven't heard for a while.
The Gold Bond Mafia, yeah. We were really stupid sometimes. I mean, just, you know, it would be random things. Ace would rent these minivans, and I don't even know where he got them from, Enterprise or whatever. And it was pretty much, you know, let's say we were doing Minneapolis from Chicago, so that's about a 6.5 hour drive. And Ace would be the senior man in the car, so basically he'd set the rules, you know. And it would be shenanigans from the minute they picked everyone up to the minute we got to the building and then on the way back, you know. So a lot of times we'd like stop at a – one time we went to Cleveland, and I remember I was driving, and Cabana, we had a sunroof in this thing. So we're driving along, and we had duct taped like the entire inside of this van. And I'm thinking to myself now, looking back, I mean, I don't know, what did Ace take the duct tape off, and like did it not leave residue? Did he not have to pay for it? I mean, whatever. So there's like duct tape and garbage all over the inside of this van, and we go to a Walmart parking lot, and at that time, Cabana would reference chaps, you know, like cowboys or bikers wear. So we're driving up and down the aisles of this Walmart parking lot, and he's popping out of the sunroof, and he's asking people, excuse me, ma'am, do you know if they sell chaps in this Walmart? And the people would look at us like we're idiots. And he's like, you know, assless chaps. I need some chaps. And then, like, all of a sudden the door would fly open, and we'd water bomb them with squirt guns or with, you know, water balloons and just stupid stuff like that. Just ridiculous shenanigans to pass the time. Or we'd have, like, Ace would say, okay, we're driving. If we're going to St. Louis and it's 6 hours, we're only listening to one song the entire way. And if you fall asleep, you'd get chopped or get some crap thrown at you. It was just ridiculous stuff. But it was always better than the 20 bucks you were going to make at the show, you know what I mean? You drive for 6 hours and act like idiots for all that time and make, you know, really long-lasting friendships with people. I mean, where else can you pack 6 or 7 guys in a van and act like 10-year-olds and get paid for it, even if you're not getting paid a lot? You know what I mean?
Yeah, I have to agree. So tell me about the Goon Squad gimmick.
The Goon Squad. I think the Goon Squad was a brainchild of Rockin' Randy Ritchie, who was one of my original trainers. And the gimmick basically was if they needed a heel tag team, they would put two dudes in shorts and they'd have nylons, you know, like thigh-high nylons over their head. And they were goons. And, you know, whatever your definition of goon is, he always said that he saw the gimmick in Memphis for Jarrett, which I've never seen a tape anywhere of idiots wrestling with nylons over their head. I think it was a rib to begin with, but that was Punk and Cabana's first deal before they were able to wrestle as, you know, themselves or whatever names they wanted. If there was a spot open or somebody didn't show up, they would need someone to be a goon, so one of those two would be a goon. And they tagged a couple times as the goons, and it was funny. And Brad Bradley or Bradley J or whatever the hell they call him now down in Florida for the WWE developmental territory, he was a goon when he first started. Just funny. I think at one point all of us were goons. Probably still are, depending upon who you ask.
Well, I would like to fast forward some time, Mr. Pearson. On April 28, 2007, you lost the match, and his last match in Ring of Honor, Colt Cabana. And I saw the ending interview you did at the end of the match, and then when you spit in Cabana's face, that was a very, very interesting send-off, because generally when you have a send-off, the guy who's leaving loses the match, and then instead of having respect and admiration for him, well, you kind of had some of that, but then you ended up spitting in his face. It was just very interesting. So I was wondering about the thoughts of why it was handled the way it was handled.
Because I don't want to insult anybody, but I think sometimes now it's more increasingly difficult for a heel in wrestling to be a heel and to actually get heat that a heel is supposed to get, because they end up doing interviews like this or, you know, talking positively about their opponent or whatnot. So we basically did it as a swerve, because I think everyone had anticipated, okay, Cabana chose me for his final opponent because of our history, and whether or not that was a popular choice with the fans in Chicago, it didn't matter. But I said to him, and to Gabe, the booker of Ring of Honor, I said, I mean, please tell me I don't have to, like, give him a hug and all that crap after the match. I mean, I can do that in the locker room or at the bar later on, you know. I don't want to go out there and basically beat on a guy, or, you know, give the impression that I'm trying to injure or beat my opponent for 15 or 20 minutes, only at the end to give him a hug and, you know, slap him on the ass and give him a kiss and say, great job, I miss you, or whatever, anything like that. I said, can we please not do that? And thankfully, he was on the same page and said, I'm glad you said that, because I don't want to do that. He goes, how about if we tease all of that, because that's what the people will be expecting, and then you just swerve it on him and do a 180 and spit right in his face. And I think it was even Cabana who said, why don't you just spit right in my face? And so I tried to work up a really big loogie just to make him pay for it. And I actually missed. I mean, I got him with like half of it, but most of it went in the crowd, and I was pretty pissed at myself. Because you don't really get opportunities to just haul off and hock one right in somebody's face, you know, at least not without expecting a fight. But, yeah, well, that was fun. That was a good time. And it was emotional. Again, the guys were all emotional. I had just, when Punk left, it was like 2 weeks before I started in Ring of Honor back in 05, so I didn't get a chance to see that. But I'm told it was pretty similar backstage when Cabana got the call to go, too. And Matt Sydal, too, when he left. And that was a weird night, because not only was it Cabana's last night, it was also Chris Daniels' last night, because TNA was pulling all of their talent. So it was like losing, like, you know, a huge part of the foundation of that locker room all in one night. It's a really weird night.
Well, we're going to discuss a promotion that's across the bay from me. I live near San Francisco, and we're going to talk a little about All Pro Wrestling. And my personal favorite Adam Pearce match was on July 28th, 01, where you worked my personal favorite wrestler ever, Mike Modest.
Yeah.
Any stories about Michael?
I always liked Mike, and as a matter of fact, Mike calls me from time to time. You know what? I think that match, if I'm remembering the right match, he had just gotten back from Japan either the day before or 2 days before. And I remember he was hurt and didn't want to do a whole hell of a lot. And so we went out there and kind of did our match and whatnot. And Mike was the senior man in the ring. So by all accounts, he calls the match, you know. And I think we were scheduled, Roland wanted us to go 15 or 18 or something like that. And we probably got 10 minutes in, and Mike was ready to go home. And he's like, oh, you know, let's take it home. And he was calling the spots. And I interrupted him and called one of my own. And I think I hit a pile driver on him. And we kept going for like another 2 minutes. And the referee, when we went to our finish, the referee was supposed to count three. And I think it was an Oklahoma roll was the finish. I was going to give him an Oklahoma roll for a quick pin out of nowhere. And the ref stopped counting at two. And so then, obviously, if that's your finish, you have one of two choices. You can ad-lib and go to something else. But when it was so blatant like that, that the finish was blown and everyone in the building knew it, I think it just ended up that me and Mike ended up beating the crap out of the ref together. And then so we left, and it was kind of like, okay, you know, that was odd. You know, that sucked. That's not what we had planned or whatever. And sometimes things like that happen. And then we got backstage, and I was like, hey, you know, thanks for the match. And Mike got really pissed at me for basically calling a spot on him that he wasn't comfortable taking because, you know, he was beat up from Japan and tired. And at that time, I think, what, I had probably only been working for, I don't know, 4 years, 4 or 5 years. Like, 2001, when did I start, 96? So 5 years. And obviously Mike was the senior man, so it was cool from the sense that me and Mike had good chemistry, and I felt like a tool afterwards because I basically could have put him in harm's way by calling a spot that he wasn't ready for, and he called me on the carpet for it, and it was a good thing. It was a lesson learned, and I always liked Mike. I wish Mike would have been able to stay in Japan more with Donovan Morgan and make more money, and I know he's doing all right now. I think he lives in Northern California right now, if I'm not mistaken. Mm-hmm. I like Mike. I was surprised Mike didn't get a bigger shot in WCW when him and Chris Daniels first signed back in the day.
It's a shame.
Yeah, it really is.
To be honest, I've never seen a heel on the independent level with the heat that man had on the mic. Yeah, I mean,
oh,
he was
awesome.
People wanted to kill him. And,
yeah, Mike
was
awesome.
I loved his work, too. He was just, oh, amazing, amazing. Amazing talent. Okay. Let's see.
Okay.
The second King of the Indies. And you worked Doug Williams in the first round.
Right.
What do you think of Doug?
I love Doug. I think Doug is one of the best pure wrestlers on the earth. No doubt about it. And you know what's funny about that? We got a lot of heat. Well, I should say I got a lot of heat. When that thing was booked, the King of Indies, you know, I guess in Roland's mind, Roland Alexander wanted this to be modeled after a Japanese-type tournament. You know, with minimal crowd interaction, definitely not relying on heel or face necessarily mentality in the ring. It was more or less an athletic exhibition between two wrestlers. And I'll be honest with you, that has never been my strong suit. I've never been in what I would consider that good of a pure wrestler to go in the ring and just exchange holds for 15 minutes and have it be enjoyable. I'm super bored when I try to do that. When I watch tapes where I have matches like that, I just turn them off because I can't stand watching it. So I remember in the locker room they were having a meeting, I guess, you know, to try and go over these concepts, and I had gotten there late and I missed the meeting, and I think Spanky did too. So I got filled in what they were doing, and my first question was, well, if we're doing a straight wrestling tournament with no heels or baby faces, why am I even here? Like, that's... It just didn't make any sense to me. And Spanky was like, yeah, I agree. I don't like this at all. You know, I'm obviously a baby face. Pierce is obviously a heel. Why would we go out there and not play to our strengths? So I think that pissed Roland off from the beginning. And fortunately, I was in the opener that night against Doug. So I just told him, I said, hey, man, we can do whatever you want to do. You can do all the fancy wrestling you want. I said, but when it comes to my portions of the match, I'm just going to try and get heat. I'm just going to work like it's 1970, and I'm probably not going to even bump you a whole lot, and I'll cheat and choke and punch and kick and do what I do, and you know what? If I get heat for it, so be it, but that's what I'm going to do because it's the opener, and there's no reason for us to go out there and do 100 finishers in 10 minutes. There's just no reason for it, and I knew that, you know, as far as pure wrestling was, the matches after us were going to be featuring guys that were way better at it than I am. So I just kind of went against, you know, what Roland wanted and kind of did what I thought was best for the show. And again, that's probably not what you want to do when you're a younger guy in the business, but I've never claimed to be the easiest guy to work with. And I'm not saying that, you know, as a bad thing. I just thought it was better for the show if I went out there and did what I did. And the crowd reacted to it. You know, and that's what we wanted. It got the point across, and I wasn't going on in the tournament anyhow. It was basically my job to make Doug Williams look as good as I could, and we accomplished that. So, yeah, Roland wasn't too happy after the fact, but, you know, what are you going to do? I mean, it's that was a weird tournament anyway with some of the things that went on with Bison Smith later and Donovan later in the tournament, and I'm not even sure you know what I'm referring to, but a lot of people didn't really agree with the direction that APW was taking at that time, and it wasn't just me. And I think that even to this day, I think there's still some residual heat, even though we're, what, 7 years later. And I saw Roland at that San Francisco WrestleFest, and you'd think we were best buddies, but I'd read some things that he's written, you know. I think I read somewhere that he said, you know, if I wasn't playing a heel, I wouldn't know how to wrestle at all. And that's unfortunate, because I'd never disliked Roland personally. But I guess he holds a grudge more than I would.
Well, Mr. Pierce, you keep making references to old school, and I don't necessarily believe in old school and new school. I just think there's right and wrong, and I believe that 95% of stuff I see you do is right. So I would like to know where you got a lot of your ideas and opinions about wrestling from. Was it what you grew up watching, or was it certain people in your life that imparted that knowledge onto you?
You know what? I'm glad you. I like the way you put that. You know, it's not so much new school or versus old school. It's right versus wrong, and I agree with that. Unfortunately, that's not a real popular opinion amongst the younger wrestlers today. Fortunately for me, it allows me to stand out, which is why I think I have a job in a company like Ring of Honor, where what I do is completely opposite of 90% of the wrestler guys in the company. So it kind of you know, gives me a spot by default, which is great. And it boils down basically to what I grew up watching. I grew up in suburban Chicago, and what we saw on TV from as young as I can remember was the AWA. And if you watch some of the AWA stuff now that they show on ESPN, you look at it and you go, oh, my God, this is some of the worst wrestling I've ever seen in my life. Just because of the format they use for those ESPN shows. But I grew up watching guys like Nick Bockwinkel and Bobby Heenan and, you know, Vern Gagne, although I don't obviously wrestle like Vern Gagne, but those type of talents coming through, and young Jim Brunzel, and even guys like Tito Santana that started out in that territory. I mean, even Flair started there. So I remember watching that stuff on TV, All-Star Wrestling, and then I don't even remember when it was that I discovered the NWA on TBS, but then it was, you know, Ole and Arn Anderson and Tully Blanchard and Ric Flair and Magnum T.A., and a young Sting, and that stuff is always what grabbed me as far as wrestling. And then much later with WWE, when it was WWF at that point, and, you know, when I was a kid, I loved Hulk Hogan and all that too. But even in that early stuff, the style was pretty similar, you know, and that's what I fell in love with. And fortunately, the guys that I worked with, my initial trainers was a man named Sonny Rogers, who worked on a lot of underneath cards for Vern Gagne for 15 or 20 years, and Randy Ritchie, who worked for the USWA in Memphis. So that's how I was trained. I was trained the way that they were trained and the way that they were working, and I guess I've just stuck to that. So that's why I do what I do.
I have a question. On the most recent ROH pay-per-view, you're involved in a scramble match.
Uh-huh.
So knowing about a lot of your mentalities, how do you feel about being in a scramble match?
Hate it. Hate it, hate it, hate it. I will say this. They're fun because it's balls to the wall. It's 100 miles an hour. And fortunately, like, we did a tag scramble. So there were, what, four teams? That's eight guys. I think they gave us 8 minutes. So basically it was, all right, everybody pick one or two things that you want to do in the match and then get the hell out of the way. You know, and it's hard. Obviously, you're not going to really be able to tell any type of psychological story with eight guys going 100 miles an hour in 8 minutes. So we have our finish, and it's pretty much, okay, we have a puzzle. Let's try and get, you know, eight pieces together of this 100-piece puzzle in 8 minutes and get to our finish. And fortunately, I've seen them where they're hit and miss, where guys would just go absolutely insane with the spots and whatnot, and the crowd will absolutely sit on their hand. And I think fortunately, because we were in New York City where they're always hot, they were there for us. And it gets the adrenaline going. Definitely by far not my favorite matches at all, in fact, because I can't remember spots. If we called a 10-minute match in the back and called it all, I would forget half of it. I just don't have the memory for that. I'm better off just kind of working on the fly once we're in the ring. And with a scramble, obviously, it's kind of getting from A to B to C to D to E to F, and you've got to remember the letters in between. Otherwise, you screw up the sequence, and then pretty soon you're all screwed up. So that was a fun one. That was a fun one, but generally I hate those matches.
I'm just now realizing that maybe an hour with you, Mr. Pierce, isn't enough time because this next question is going a completely different direction. But my friend will get mad at me if I don't ask. Last week we had Sean Davis from the Heartbreak Express on, and he is one half of the AWA Tag Team Champions. And he was saying that on a couple of occasions during title defenses that the matches have almost brought become a shoot because the promoter has told the tag team, hey, go out there and take the belts off these guys. So as the National Wrestling Alliance World Heavyweight Champion, have you ever had a match turn into a shoot where someone's trying to actually take the belt off of you?
No. No, thankfully. And I like Sean, and I like Phil, the Heartbreak Express, a lot. I think they're awesome. And it surprises me that they would have guys trying to do that to them just because of their personalities and how they conduct themselves in locker rooms. You're not going to find two more professional guys ever. And I've been lucky. I haven't had anybody try to throw a hold on or choke me out or whatever. I mean, I think that'd be absolutely ridiculous in this day and age for somebody to actually try to do that. I mean, we're out there working for a common goal, and that's to entertain the fans and make our pay, whatever that pay happens to be. And just because one of us has a title belt for whatever company you're working for, that has really nothing to do with your goal out there. And anytime you're in a situation where somebody is trying to go into business for themselves and is going to put their opponent in harm's way so that they can try and carry a belt, which is a prop, which doesn't in this day and age guarantee you more money, that's just a ridiculous thing. It's just a concept that I can't even understand. And I'm sure there's guys out there who are just complete idiots that would think, oh, it'd be great if I could be the AWA Tag Team Champions or the NWA Champion or whatever, so I'm going to try and, you know, twist this guy's shoulder out or pop a kneecap or whatever the case may be. And I've been lucky. I think most of the promoters that I've worked for aren't going to put me in the situation where I'm going to have to defend myself. And that's a good thing. You know, I'm not a shooter by any means, but I've never backed away from a good fight. So, if that were to ever happen, it would get ugly. The match would fall apart in a heartbeat. Now they get my ass kicked. You never know. But hopefully it never comes to that. I can't see that happening.
And Ring of Honor's six-year history, in my opinion, they're starting to develop one of the greatest things that I think they've ever developed, putting together two of my favorite wrestlers, and that is the merger of Swing Sour International and the Hangman's Three. So now I get to see more interactions between you and Larry Sweeney. What are some of your thoughts on Larry Sweeney?
Larry Sweeney is awesome. Larry Sweeney, I guess I would say, and this is high praise, he's today's Bobby Heenan, and I don't really know any other way to really describe it, and I wish there was a way that Larry could find himself in a situation to capitalize on that, because he oozes charisma, you put a microphone in his hand and he's gold, and he memorizes all his damn speeches. I don't know how he does it. I had this conversation with him in Philadelphia at the last pay-per-view taping. We were kind of going over what we were supposed to get across on the microphone to put over the whole merger, and he's like reciting this thing word for word, and I'm looking at a script because we have a script, and I never follow it. I mean, I kind of do, but he was like, on, man. I said, Larry, how do you memorize all this stuff? I go, you're nuts. And he's a super intelligent guy and a great wrestler too, and he unfortunately really hasn't got the opportunity in Ring of Honor to do that much yet, although I think there's going to be some places for that, you know, going forward. But it's just like you hear all the other guys say, when Bobby Heenan was a manager, he was still the best wrestler on the card too. And I think that Larry Sweeney, in the right situation against the right opponents, can have great matches. And it's going to be fun to see what kind of interaction we're going to have on the microphone, especially because Larry and I think a lot alike in terms of how wrestling should be, and especially, you know, when it comes to mic work and things like that, we're real similar in that end, and we like a lot of the same things and the same historical guys and the same angles from the past, so it's really easy, and I think the chemistry is going to be really good, and we're just getting started with it. So, yeah, I mean, it's looking up. It's definitely looking up.
As far as being a touring champion, I've seen that you've worked in the Midwest, you've worked all over California, you've worked in the Virginia area. Are there any up-and-comers, you know, that you see on the horizon, you know, that would, you know, possibly be able to move up to the higher echelon up the cards?
See, there, you know, there are guys in every territory, and I don't care where you're working. There are guys that are awesome everywhere. And it's unfortunate, and it's just a byproduct of how wrestling has turned out in the last 25 years, that the actual territories, as they were defined in the early 80s, don't exist. But they do in a sense that you can still go to all those areas, and all those guys were still brought up by the same guys that were there before them. So it's like the territories never fell apart, except there's no money in them anymore. So now you've got, instead of one head honcho in each area, there's probably three or four promoters who don't realize that if they actually worked together and promoted one card, they would all make money, and they wouldn't lose on five shows when they could run one. You mentioned Virginia. There's a guy in Virginia named Damian Wayne who I think is awesome. And I think the only thing that's holding him back, the only thing holding Wayne back, and I don't even know if it's so much of a crutch, but you know, he's 35 years old, and he got into the business late. And he's a hell of an athlete. I know that. I think he played minor league baseball, and he's in great shape, and he can talk, and he looks the part. And I'm actually going back out there on May 10th. We're going to have a rematch for the world title out there in Virginia, and I'm looking forward to it because I think Wayne is definitely one of these guys that, in the right situation, would definitely can get a look. I know he's had a sniff and done some dark matches for WWE and has some connections in TNA, and he's worked some of the pre-shows in Ring of Honor in the past and is actually working in Florida now for FIP. So I would hope that he'd be in Ring of Honor sooner than later. In Texas, there's a guy named Psicodelico Jr. who's been on some shows, and he's actually a third-generation luchador. And he's only been working American style probably for the last two or three years, but again, we're talking about a natural athlete.
He was in San Diego in Oceanside this past Sunday.
The Show Palace or wherever the name of that building is. Yeah, I like him a lot. I wrestled him in Houston in front of 4,000 people, and you would have thought he was Mil Máscaras in his prime. Actually, Mil Máscaras was on the show too, and he got a hell of a reaction, and he's just super easy to work with and looks like $1 million. He's probably 6'3", 240, cut, in good shape, and can talk a little bit, and I'd like to see him branch out. It seems like he stays predominantly on the lucha-oriented shows, but he's a guy that I think could cross over too because he's personable and he can work. Yeah, definitely.
He's got good size too. You know, he's not the Mysterio type smaller.
No, not at all. He's definitely a bigger guy. Definitely.
Well, Mr. Yeah. Pierce, you were predominantly in the Midwest, and then in 2001, I believe, you made your move over to Southern California. And obviously you've had a great, great career over here in Southern California. But my question is, how was that transition from being someone established in the Midwest and then coming over to Southern California as an unknown?
You know, it's funny. When I moved out here in November of 2000, just after Thanksgiving, and I had moved out here with the intention of not wrestling. I had experiences before I left Chicago with WCW that I didn't end up taking the developmental contracts that they'd offer, and I had made the decision to go back to school and, you know, met my wife out here and decided I'm going to move to California and kind of start over, because when I had my interactions and dealings with WCW in 99 and 2000 was right when that entire company was going to hell in a handbasket. So I it's not like I had contract offers from WWE, but I had tryouts set up that I spurned just to go to WCW on the recommendation of Paul Orndorff and Terry Taylor. So I knew that going back to WWE and saying, hey, oh, can I have my tryout now, wasn't going to be an option, because you think, you know, and I was 19 and 20 years old, that you had burned a bridge, which it turns out I never did. But so I decided, you know what, the heck with wrestling. I didn't like my experience in Atlanta. I was going to go back to school, get my degree, and you know, whatever, and get into the workforce. And it's like a million guys have said a million times, once you've got the bug, you always get back to wrestling. And honestly, that's, you know, I grew up wanting to play football, but wrestling was my second love. And since I've been with it so long, it's obviously my only love next to my wife. But so when I moved out here, I guess the independent guys had known of my name. I don't think many of them had seen me work. So I probably laid low for the first 6 or 8 months that I was out here and hadn't wrestled at all. And the first show that I wrestled once I was out here was for a company called Millennium Pro up in the Valley, L.A., and I got that hookup through Chris Daniels, who I knew from Chicago. And he said, hey, you know, these guys, you know, they pay okay. And part of the reason why I didn't work when I first moved here is that I was accustomed to making a certain figure in the Midwest and then moved out here, and the only offers that I had got when I had inquiries were substantially lower. And I guess, you know, at some point you ego says to you, well, you know, I feel I'm worth X amount, and if this guy's only going to offer me this amount, I'll stay home. So that's kind of the attitude I had, and only until Daniel said, hey, man, you know what, you might want to check these guys out. They're going to put on, they put on decent shows, and I work for them, and, you know, I'll vouch for you, and blah, 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 did I really throw my hat back in the ring. And that first match, my first match back really was a three-way, me, Chris Daniels, and Frankie Kazarian. It was the first time I wrestled Frankie, and that was, well, I guess, 2001, yeah. Somebody told me that was on YouTube, that match. I haven't seen, I don't even have a tape of that. I'll have to go look for it. But, yeah, that was fun. And then through that, then I got referred to Rick Bassman and UPW, and I got referred to them by Kevin Kelly at the WWE, who I was dealing with before I pissed them off by not going on tryouts for them. So I worked for Bassman, and it kind of just spiraled from there. And pretty soon there was Epic Pro Wrestling and PWG, and here we are today.
Tremendous.
Yeah.
Okay, we are we're running down on time.
Sure.
But I did want to ask you a question. Dave Meltzer's WrestlingObserver.com website, on the 17th of April, he posted the results from the SoCal Pro wrestling show from the night before, and I found here during the write up that there was something that really disturbed me as a fan. And I'd like to know your opinion. And I'm going to read this word for word from the report. It says, Adam
sure.
Pearce beat Ricky Mandel to keep the NWA world title. Then in parentheses it says, my, how the title has fallen from Lou Thesz and Ric Flair to SoCal Pro Wrestling. Any opinions on that? I mean, I personally was offended.
Yeah, you know, I've met Dave, and I've done Dave's radio show in the past, and Dave's opinions are Dave's opinions. I guess there's a couple ways you can look at it. If any of us, and this is probably his point of view, if any of us, any wrestling fan, is naive enough to think that the NWA World title means the same thing in 2008 that it did in 1983 or 84 or 85 or 86, I mean, obviously we're not talking apples to apples. A lot has happened in professional wrestling, in particular with the NWA, between that time and now. So I think it's a little unfair, well, maybe not unfair, but unfortunate that Dave would even need to print that. Because to me, when you look at the lineage of the belt, sure, you go from Flair, you know, from Lou Thesz to Flair, and then there was a lull from 94 until whenever TNA picked it up. And you had, you know, guys as champion. You had Steve Corino and Mike Rapata and Dan Severn. And I've always thought that the NWA as a governing body has put itself in the best position that it could given its circumstances. So obviously when Jim Crockett was at its heyday and they had Ric Flair and they had Barry Windham and they had Sting and the Four Horsemen and that belt was the, you know, the top prize in the sport, that's a great thing for the NWA. But when Ted Turner buys Jim Crocker Promotions and pulls out of the NWA in 94 and kind of leaves the NWA in a situation where now it's lost its national television exposure, it's lost its top stars, what is that as an organization supposed to do? So you put it on the best guys that are available that aren't under contract and hope that they can carry the belt to some honor and have some reputability and do what they can to keep the NWA title in the highest esteem possible. Okay, then they get another opportunity with TNA in, what, 02, I guess, when they started going national, and it was a no-brainer. The TNA wanted the NWA titles. The NWA certainly needed the exposure, and so it was a win-win for both companies. And that went on until it fell apart, and there's a bunch of reasons why it fell apart. But regardless, the NWA then takes control of their belts, and TNA gets their own, and now the NWA is basically in the same position it was in 94, which is, okay, we can't put it on anybody in WWE. We're not working with TNA anymore. What are our options? Do we put it on someone from New Japan? Do we put it on someone from down in Mexico? Or do we find somebody homegrown here in the States who's affordable to the NWA promoters, has a decent enough reputable name that it's not not you know ridiculous that this person could carry the belt? And ultimately, I wasn't the first choice, but it ended up coming to me, and I've done the best I can given the tools that I have, and be that my own booking myself out myself, or the NWA Board of Directors finding bookings for the title, or whatever, they're doing the best they can. I'm doing the best I can with it. And it's stupid for anyone, including Dave Meltzer, to ridicule something that obviously is in a different circumstance, a different day, and a different time. SoCal Pro Wrestling didn't need to be buried on a website that has, I don't even, what do you want to say, millions of viewers. I mean, let's just say millions of viewers. There's no reason why these people who've never seen a SoCal Pro Wrestling show need to read that and automatically think that SoCal Pro Wrestling is some junk, bum-fed that is crap, because it's not true. And if Dave Meltzer was to see a tape of their shows, I'm sure there would be talent on there that he thinks is subpar. I'm sure there'd be talent and matches on there that he thinks is great. And for someone just to blindly throw out that opinion, regardless if it's valid or not, just to disparage what people are trying to do, really, to me, there was no point. There's no point in saying that. It's just ignorant, in my opinion. And I actually emailed him after I saw that. And all I said was, Dave, thank you for bearing the NWA title in SoCal Pro Wrestling. We all appreciate it. And that's all I said. And I never got a response, which I'm not surprised. But you know what? To Dave's credit, he provides a service for a bunch of fans, and he makes money at it, so God bless him. And he's entitled to his opinion. And none of us have to agree with it. And I wasn't so much offended by it as I was disappointed, because to me, to compare the NWA of 85 to now is just ridiculous, because it's not the same beast at all. And anyone who's involved in wrestling would know that. So why can't we just embrace what it is? You know, it's not like it's 95, 96 and the NWA isn't running shows and the champion works once every 4 months. I mean, I'm defending this thing at least twice a month, at least since I got it in September of 07. I'm doing my part. And you know what? And I'm happy that Pro Wrestling Illustrated came out this month, and there's a really good spread on the NWA with some really good pictures, and I think it's out on newsstands on Tuesday. I was happy to see a copy of it. And it's good. It's positive, and it should be, because anything that's good for wrestling, and what the NWA is doing now is good for wrestling, doesn't deserve comments like that. There's no reason for it. None whatsoever.
Awesome. Well, Mr. Pierce, I really appreciate your time. I would love to have you back on in May, if possible.
Sure.
My co-host is sending me a message here. He says that we just scratched the surface with you. So I really appreciate you coming on. How can fans contact you, or promoters that would like to book you? How can they contact you?
I got a couple of websites, and neither one of them are updated nearly as often as they should be, and that's because I'm lazy. I'll admit it. www.freewebs.com/scrapiron. There's a contact button on there. It goes to my Hotmail. It's scrapdaddy74@hotmail.com. I'm sure you could go to nwawrestling.com and click on their contact tab. And if anyone's interested, or you know, wants what I can bring to the table for your show, I'd be more than happy to do it. Like I said, I'm all about trying to do what's good for wrestling, and if I can help a promoter and the promoter can help me, then it's a win-win, and let's do it. So, yeah, I mean, I don't have a MySpace because I'm not that advanced. So, you know, whatever, ringofhonor.com, or you know, was it ROHWrestling.com, NWAWrestling.com, or my website and my email, scrapdaddy74@hotmail. And I just appreciate being on, man. It's fun, and I appreciate you guys' format. And, again, any time, man, I appreciate it.
It's all good. And when I get off the air, I'm going to give Mr. Jeff Dino a call, and I'm going to see what I can do about getting you booked in a title defense against Chris Escobar. I saw this guy on this past NWA showcase, and that kid is really, really good. I think
you guys
would match up pretty well.
Yeah. He came out here from NWA Virginia, and he's worked with Damian Wayne a million times. I can't believe I forgot him. Yeah, he's out here now. I guess that's why I didn't bring him up. But, yeah, Chris Escobar is awesome. awesome. Pure talent, Chris Escobar, and he'll be around on some California independents, I'm sure, and on some of the bigger NWA shows because he's definitely an awesome talent.
He's already sent out feelers, so we will be seeing him in SoCal Pro very, very soon.
Awesome.
Well, once again, Mr. Pierce, thanks for coming on, brother. It was definitely my pleasure. I will be in contact with you. We'll hopefully get you booked in May, closer to the SoCal Pro Wrestling Anniversary Show.
Sounds good. I appreciate it. Thanks for having me on, and thanks for supporting wrestling.
All righty, brother. Thank you for your time.
All right, guys. Take care. God bless.
All right. Okay, Alex, now that was – all right, you know what? I'm going to go on the record. I'm going to have to say that that was the best interview we've had on Rubber Guard Radio, and it took us 50 episodes to get that one done.
We've had a lot of great – I mean – yeah, we've had a lot of great ones, and I had about a million more questions I could have asked them and a lot of other stuff I would have liked to have got into, so I'm definitely looking forward to having them back.
We'll get him on again, brother. It's all good.
Okay. All
remember, he tends to work for my sponsor, so, you know, I seem to have the heads up above other radio shows. So it's cool.
All right.
You know, I have an in like that. So what we're doing is we're waiting for Mr. Kenny Boland to call in. It looks like Kenny's dinner is running a little late, so he should be calling in very soon. So what else is going on in the news?
Frank Trigg has been added to the lockdown doing commentary for Angle versus Joe. So it's interesting that they would have outside MMA sources other than UFC sources. You know, because it seems like they should be able to get someone with UFC because the Spike TV deal or whatever. But it's very interesting how hard they're pushing this fight as like this wrestling match is more of a MMA hybrid. It's very interesting. It's very unique.
It's gonna. I have the feeling it's gonna be a UWFI type. You know, it's gonna be Vader and Takata again, kind of thing. You know, where they're gonna just stiff the shit out of each other with strikes and kicks, open hand strikes and kicks.
Yeah. I mean, it should be very interesting. I mean, it's built up a lot more interest for me than just your standard TNA pay-per-view.
Well, I'm just interested in the main event. There's nothing else on there that even gets me close to thinking of ordering it. You know, it's not. For one, I just can't stomach the product. And two, there's just really nothing there. There's nothing else hot. And then after this Joe Angle match, then what?
Well, I mean, I don't know. I'm just saying if you want to build up interest for one match, for one show, it's building up interest for me. You know, it's just interesting. So it should be interesting to see what the buy rate is for this pay-per-view. I'm just saying, I mean, it's just building up interest, you know? I mean,
you know, this should have been the angle and, you know, the stipulations and whatnot for their third match in their series.
Yeah, but you can't go back and rewrite the past, so. You can't go back and rewrite the past, and it seems like it's just very interesting. I mean, it seems I haven't been watching the TV shows of late, and it's just I've been hearing a lot about what they're doing for this match. It's good that they're, you know, able to build up some kind of interest for this match. I mean, I'm interested in it. I don't know what the buzz is over anyone else, but I just know for myself it's very interesting. But did you watch the first show of The Ultimate Fighter?
Yes, and the second one.
Oh, okay, well, I haven't seen the second one yet. But the first one, I got this overwhelming – I love the Ultimate Fighter television show, I have to say that. But it just really – I really got the overwhelming feeling after watching – because I had a full day of just watching MMA. I watched a couple of the last UFC pay-per-views. I watched Strikeforce show, and then it's just it baffles me that they can still find talent, the caliber of what they had. Because Forrest Griffin is a co-host on the show, and as we all know, he won the first season, him and Diego Sanchez. And it's going to baffle me if they can continue to find the caliber of talent that they were able to find with the earlier seasons.
Mm. Well,
I think Tommy Spear Tommy Spear is evident of that because Spear is really good and natural. Yeah, but he's definitely not ready to be one of the big guys in UFC. And, I mean, Forrest was somewhat ready from when he first came off the show. And
well, Forrest was ready before. Forrest didn't need the show. But we have on the line the king of OVW, Kenny Bolin. How you doing, boss?
Boy, I was almost late, wasn't I? I was almost late. Just getting back in from a late dinner tonight and walked in the door, saw it was 12:32 my time, and realized I had something I'd promised somebody I'd do tonight, and that was you, wasn't it?
Yes, sir. Yes, sir.
So just got
going out there.
Pardon?
In Louisville. How's it going out there?
Well, just got done doing the DCW show tonight, and went out and had dinner with a couple of the boys, and just getting back here in time to get online with you guys. OVW still going strong. Crowd attendance, even since the WWE departure, crowd still going strong. House show's going strong. We're very pleased with the direction everything's going in right now.
Cool.
But I bet you all have a ton of questions. Now, I'm sure you all got a ton of questions. I'm going to dedicate as much time to you as I can, but I have been trying to recover from a bad cough, so bear with me through this. I might be coughing on you a little bit.
Not a problem.
And I have no cough button, so just bear with me through this, and we'll get through it as best we can.
Cool.
Okay. How is OVW and the staff handling the loss of Timmy Baltimore, who just signed a WWE contract?
Funny you bring that up, because I didn't know a thing about it until I got to television last night. And,
oh, wow.
Timmy Baltimore was a real nice addition to the show. I thought he did a real good job with us, especially with the three-man broadcast crew on OVW. It was more or less Dean Hill as the play-by-play guy. Timmy Baltimore, the facts and figures guy, does all the stats and details and backgrounds on everybody. And then I chime in with my 2 cents worth on what they say. So originally, I didn't really like the three-man team. I kind of liked it being me and Dean. We clicked pretty good together, but kind of similar to how I'm sure Lawler and Ross feel about each other. They probably don't particularly like a third wheel out there too much, but Timmy was a nice addition. I liked it a whole lot better than I thought I would. And I'll actually even say it, I'll actually miss the little guy. All 120 pounds of him.
Well, a friend of the show that was trained by Buddy Wayne and Brian Alvarez up in Seattle has made the move to Louisville, Shiloh Mount. Have you gotten
Shiloh,
a chance to see him
in
the ring?
I think I saw Shiloh briefly tonight. I think he was, I believe he was in one of the dark matches tonight. And from what I saw, did a great job. If I'm not mistaken, does he have an aerial attack to his game, a lot of unusual maneuvers and everything?
Something like that.
Yeah, he was. I didn't get to see much of him, but from what I saw tonight, I was impressed with what I saw. I think he's got some promise to him.
Well, he has a handful of matches, you know.
Really? He doesn't have that much experience,
yeah.
Yeah, I don't know a whole lot about the boy yet, but I'm sure as time goes on and as Rip Rogers gets his hands on him, I'm sure he will progress nicely.
Yes, you will see. The man-beast will eat Brian's or Chico's friend. So
that's going to be fun stuff. Did you guys get to see the one-hour match with man-beast and Chico?
Very good stuff.
Man, that was an unbelievable match for a couple of guys. Number one, I don't think Chico had been in the ring in probably 3 or 4 years, I guess, and Man Beast. Not a ton of experience. He's just been in the OVW system, I guess, a couple of years or so, and maybe not even that long. Primarily known as a referee, and boy, he sure impressed us all. He did a heck of a job right along there with Chico.
What were your thoughts when you first found out that whoever, is it Rip Rogers that made the decision that, the man, like you just said, a man with not too much experience and a guy who's not known as an active wrestler were going to go out there for an hour? Was that almost the rib that Rip was playing on him? Or?
Well, you got to remember, I go into the shows pretty much 100% totally unprepared because I like to sit at the desk and call what I see. So I had no clue how long that match was going to go. And I like to keep it. I do that for OVW television. People find that hard to believe, and Danny Davis will tell anyone that comes through. He says, "You people may not believe this, but Kenny Bolin does not prepare. He walks in the door at 6:55, and he's on the air at 7 o'clock." And I treat Derby City the same way. Rip Rogers wasn't too fond of that at first, but I think he along with everybody else agrees that I just feel I do much better work if I just walk in and call what I see. And so I had no whether they were going to go a minute, 5 minutes, or an hour. I had no idea. And but I was very, you know, as time went on, it was getting evident what was going to happen. And it was an impressive match. What did I think when I first heard it was going to be Chico against Man Beast? I'm thinking disaster, because I didn't know anything about Chico. I just knew what I did know about him. He hadn't been in the ring in 3 or 4 years. He was going to come down here and work a wrestler that he hadn't knew nothing about. And it just, to me, had the blueprint for disaster. Two have never wrestled each other before. They don't know each other's styles. How is this going to come across to the paying audience? And I have to tell you what, I have to eat my words and my thoughts, because they put on one hell of a match, and it was actually one of the better matches that's ever been held in that arena. And I don't care if it's OVW, WCW, WWE, Six Flags, it don't matter. It's been one of the better ones that I had ever seen in that arena by any participants from any company.
How are the
and
Ohio
I mean,
Valley?
And I mean that with all my heart.
Yes, sir. It was a very outstanding match. How was
especially
the
for especially for two guys that had no idea what the other one was about.
That's exactly it. That's the X factor, because they didn't know each other. I mean, Dinsmore and the Damager, or Dinsmore and Basham or Conway, they all.
Oh yeah.
I mean, they worked together for years.
Yeah, they've been working in the same they've been working in the same program and same territory for 7 years, and at least you can get a feel for each other's style and maybe what type of match your audience is going to want and play off of that. But that was not an option for them to. Basically, Chico more or less got off the plane, showed up with a suitcase, asked where the ring was, and that was about it. That was your preparation for the match that night. So for them to get in there and put on that type of performance was pretty incredible.
The biggest thing that really stands out to me about the match is that it was good, and then the fact that Ted called it, because it's not, with today's wrestling scene, it's very rare that you can find a heel of that level of experience be able to completely lead the babyface in a match, and that's just a very, I mean, like OVW needs any more proof that it's one of the top training facilities in
well,
the United
I'll
States.
Well, I'll tell you, my evaluation when Man Beast first showed up here, and then I believe that's what they were calling him, was Man Beast. And I used to see him hanging around the practices and everything, and he'd get in the ring and he'd do this, that, and the other. And I think he came up to me and asked me what I thought of him and evaluated his talents and whatever. And from looking at it, I said, well, first of all, you're never ever going to see a day of television. You're never going to be on the OVW TV show. I don't know that you'll make a good wrestler. I'm not so sure that you'd make a good manager, and I'm not even sure you'd make a good referee. But if you want to come here and pay your money and try to learn this, then you're more than welcome. You know, no one's going to run you off. As long as you put out a good effort, come to practice every day and do your best. He said, but if you're asking my opinion, you're never going to see a day of OVW television. And he showed us all wrong, because I got with Rip Rogers later and turned out Rip Rogers told him exactly the same thing. And he has probably come further on less God-given talent than anybody I've ever seen in the wrestling business. And you can drop names on me all day if you want. I don't know who you're going to drop on me who had less to begin with than Ted the Trailer McNaylor. I mean, just a shy kid, always had his head down, never made eye contact with you, just as humble as the day is long. And now he's got all this newfound confidence, and he can get in the match and go with anybody. I mean, I don't care who it is. I'd throw him in there with John Cena, and I bet you they'd have a good match.
How are the Ohio Valley fans that are regulars, how are they reacting to the talent that they had become accustomed to seeing, to not seeing them anymore?
Well, here's what you got to understand. I kind of wondered the same thing when I knew the split was coming and they had been spoiled with the line of talent that we've had here since '99. And what you got to remember is basically there's still pretty much that same talent here. It just doesn't have the label WWE contract talent attached to it. These are all people that are trying to earn a WWE contract talent. Because right now, and I'll say this is me speaking on my personal opinions and my feelings, there's not really anything in Florida right now that we didn't train and develop and send down there. Now, I will take away from the ones that we sent them, but there's not anything in Florida right now that I'm going to put up that's really all that much better or all that more talented than anything that we've got right now. Maybe more God-given talent. You got to remember, the WWE has searched the world over to find these guys that they have in Florida. We have people that have gotten in their cars or took a bus or whatever the case may be and showed up here just determination and whatever money they had in their pockets to want to learn the wrestling business, to want to get in here, go to beginner class, advance and learn and get to Rip Rogers class while we had the WWE contract wrestlers here to eventually one day get into the advanced class where the WWE wrestlers were. And those are the people that I want. I don't want a guy who was found in the gym and said, hey, you look like you'd be a good wrestler. Have you ever heard of Dick the Bruiser? Uh-uh. You ever heard of Jerry the King Lawler? Yeah, I've heard the name. Ain't he that Raw announcer? Well, if that's all they know about him, he don't know a whole heck of a lot about the wrestling business. And I want people that love wrestling and know wrestling and know the history of wrestling, because those are the people that will, in my opinion, will stick it out for the long term and be a benefit to your company. Unlike these people who want to make fame and fortune real quick and have been here 8 weeks and think they're already better than Kane and The Undertaker and Ric Flair and Stone Cold Steve Austin and a lot of them, and don't want to pay their dues and don't want to earn their way through the wrestling business. There's way too many of them in the business right now as it is. And once again, that is my humble opinion.
Well, I don't know if I'd go as far to say that I believe that people can tell the future, but if you ever want to do something real freaky, listen to a Jim Cornette interview around 2003, because I have a shoot interview from Jim Cornette, and then he says all these amazing things in 2003, like Batista will headline a WrestleMania, and John Cena will be a star in this business, and it's just all these amazing things that he says. But one of the things he says that made me happy.
Well, I managed John Cena for the better part of 2.5-3 years and feuded with Batista for seemingly the better half of 2.5-3 years. And, yeah, we knew all these guys had that's a little bit different in that era as to what we have now. I knew Rico was going to be a star if he was just given a chance. And once again, in my opinion, Rico should still be in the WWE right now. Rico Constantino was the ambassador for everybody flocked to be around him, and he was the most positive influence of OVW that we've ever had here. And I'll say even more than John Cena. Now, John Cena has made a bigger impact and probably means more to wrestling now, but when they were here together, it was probably Rico that was the most valuable, the MVP of OVW at that time. But see, back in that era, you had all these guys. You know, when you look at Sean O'Hare, Mark Henry, Batista, many of the talents that I had in Bowling Services, the Bull Buchanans, Shelton Benjamin, Brock Lesnar, all these guys, you knew they were going to be stars eventually. It was just a matter of when. And the talent that we have now, it's not quite like that, to where you know, well, this guy, and this guy are all going to be stars, because now it's much more the WWE, well, who can fill this hole right now? Rene Dupree, in my opinion, was not ready to be called up to the WWE, but because of this French thing going on at that time, he and Sylvain Grenier were a perfect fit to be called up at that time. And you'll have to ignore people trying to call in on me. It's just, you know, we'll just ignore them, and you'll have to hear that beep every now and then. but now it's more hole filling than it is, okay, this person's ready, let's bring them up and let's get them on the roster.
How was it WrestleMania 24 weekend? I don't know if you were able to see any of the festivities, but Ric Flair's last hurrah.
Well, I have to tell you, I did not get to see the Hall of Fame speech as of yet, but I did see the speech that he made on Raw. Ric Flair has been a pretty good friend of mine since 1986. We even had a friendly wager when the Louisville Cardinals played North Carolina in 86 before they went on to win the national title. He's a huge, not only basketball fan, but North Carolina Tar Heel fan. And he means a lot to me. If anyone who's ever looked at my websites or at KennyBolin.com or has ever looked at my MySpace page or what have you, you'll see that my inspirations in wrestling were Jerry the King Lawler, who really made me love and want to be a part of wrestling in the early 70s, and Ric Flair, who I discovered after Lawler, just for his passion and what the wrestling business meant and how he appreciated the profession of pro wrestling. He was those were the two that inspired me and wanted me to be a part of this business. And of course, Bobby Heenan, I just never thought there was any better manager than him. Cornette's great, but, you know, Cornette's been my best friend since childhood. Yeah, we've had our differences throughout our livelihood there, and I guess for 10 or 11 years on television, you'd never know that we were once best friends. But we're going to have dinner tomorrow. I consider myself probably one of the big dogs at OVW. Jimmy's one of the big dogs at TNA. So we're going to meet in Indiana, have some dinner tomorrow, compare notes about both companies, and probably reflect on a few old get-togethers from time to time.
How has Ohio Valley changed since World Wrestling Entertainment has taken away your service?
You'll have to repeat that. I'm not hearing you real clearly, and I didn't get all of that question.
How has Ohio Valley changed now that WWE is no longer using your services?
Well, it's not so much that they're not using our services. What it is now is that we don't have a working agreement. As you can tell, they called back up Crime Time. They were OVW produced and were recently let go and now just got called back up. And Timmy Baltimore got called up to the WWE and given a contract. I believe he's going to be working in Florida in the meantime, helping out with their television show whenever they get that up and running down there. And, of course, the WWE will still be working in correlation with us with Six Flags. We're going to be having WWE stars and all the upcoming Six Flags shows. We're going to be running every week out there starting May the 23rd here at the Louisville Six Flags Kentucky Kingdom. So it's not really like they've really totally gone away. We still kind of have what you would call a working relationship with them. But it's just, I guess it's that they don't really dictate the content of our television show anymore. Normally when you have OVW talent and WWE talent down here, obviously the WWE talent is what they wanted showcased on the television show. Well, now that they're not here, that created 16 slots for people from DCW to move up and be a part of the OVW television show. And once again, people that weren't found or discovered and said, hey, you ought to be a wrestler, these are people that came here on their own dime wanting to be a professional wrestler. So, it's kind of hard to say how it's changed. To me, it doesn't feel like it's changed that much. If the crowds had dropped from 500 or 600 on TV nights down to 150, then yeah, I'd say there'd been a big change. But we still turn away fans every week at the television tapings, and plus we charge now. We didn't when WWE was here, so now we're charging money and still having turn away crowds. So I guess I would say the change has not been all that dramatic. Other than I'm sure that there's money that the company's not getting to where they were paying us to develop their wrestlers. So now we look for other avenues to create those dollars. You know, we're selling our own television show on the internet. You can get the weekly shows of OVW and DCW. You can also get the podcast for $2, which to me is dirt cheap. I can't believe they do it that cheap, but you can get the podcast for $2 the minute the show's done on Wednesday nights. You don't even have to wait for it to air on on Saturdays. Like I said, y'all got to bear with me with this cough thing. It's television, I can speak in small parts, but when you're wanting me to fill an hour on your radio show, we're going to have to just put up with a little of it.
Oh, it's not a problem. Not a problem. So, now, I haven't been able to follow the OVW product, and I have been looking at past results, and the one person that really stands out is Joey Matthews. What do you think of Joey as a talent?
Really, a very solid talent from a working standpoint. Been around for a little while. Joey's had a couple of demons that he's had to deal with over the years. It's kind of hard for me to feel like we can really take any more credit for Joey Matthews because he's already been to WWE and had a spin there, and I'm sure he's trying to earn his way back. He's still a young guy. He doesn't have a lot of age on him, and I'm sure that's within his goals as well, is to keep his life on the straight and narrow and earn his way back and get another opportunity with WWE. Or whomever the case may be, but I'm sure WWE is where he would like to go back to. But he's already been here, and we've already developed him. We've already, they developed the M&M scenario there. So the ball's in his court, in my opinion. I feel he has the talent and has the youth and could definitely make it back to the WWE, but that'll be totally up to him.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, I have to agree. I've been following his career since 96.
Now, I never followed a lot of ROH. I didn't know a whole lot about him before he got here, but I've been very impressed with what he's done since he's been here.
Well, he came up with the Hardys in the Carolinas. And,
wow, that far. Honestly, I didn't realize he came up that far back.
Yeah, yeah. He's still really young.
Yeah,
you know, but
no, he's got all kinds of time. Rico Constantino never hit the WWE till he was practically 40 years old. So, anytime I hear anybody in their late 20s, early 30s, or even mid 30s, oh, it's too late, I can't make it. Yeah, tell Rico that. Rico was up there for 4 years. The average WWE career is 3.5 years anyway. So if you can get up there and make it for 4 years, if you can't sock away $1 million in that 4 years, oh, you screwed up. Everyone's got the potential to be a millionaire once they get there. It's just, you know, you got to take the ball and run with it when it's handed to you.
That's right. That's
and you
got
to remember, Rico was cut loose. Rico was cut, technically, when he signed his contract. He was on his 90 days. And through him and some of us at OVW begging for him to get an opportunity, hey, you've cut him. He's got 90 days. You're paying him anyway. Why don't you put him on the road and take a look at him? And they put him on the road, liked what they saw, and he got another 4 years out of his career that way. And forever he'll be known as Rico the Stylist. I mean, he has never-ending fame based for the 4 years he was up there. And as far as I'm concerned, one of the more entertaining segments ever on SmackDown is when Billy and Chuck were going to get married, and Bischoff was tied into that. And, hell, when Bischoff pulled that mask off and turned out to be Bischoff under the preacher's mask, hell, I thought that was one of the greatest things I'd ever seen on television. And Rico got to be a part of it. I was very proud of him because they fooled everybody. Nobody in the building knew that was coming off that way. I think just a handful of people knew what was going down that night. And I was as equally as fooled when that old man was Bischoff. I never had a clue until he said the three-minute thing. And then we said, oh, my God, they have gotten us all.
Wow. Wow, they fooled me, definitely. But, excuse me, I'm a little under the weather, too, Ken. I'm sorry.
Well, we'll just have to deal with each other, won't we?
Yes, sir. Yes, sir. So how often do you speak to Corny?
When he's in town, I would say we talked probably just about every day about one thing or another. We call it the noon report. We kind of check in with each other, see what's going on in the world of television and news and pro wrestling and share 5 or 10 minutes back and forth with each other. You got to remember, he's on the road pretty much a couple of weeks out of the year, or out of the year, out of the month, with TNA. And on Wednesdays and Thursdays, I'm pretty busy with OVW, DCW, and then I'll have a house show or two possibly to do that week as well. So, but when we've got I'd say 2 or 3 days a week when we're both not on the road. And like I said, we try to get together for a fish dinner once every month or two over at a little place we love over in Clarksville, Indiana, and we just realized we hadn't been there in 4 or 5 months, so we're going back tomorrow and gonna have a feast on some fish over in Clarksville, Indiana.
Sounds good.
Talk a little rest.
A little soul food will
a little bit.
Do your heart really good.
But no, Jimmy and I are doing much better since we no longer work for the same company. If you've seen any of the old DVDs or any of our, I think we both kind of wanted to be the big dog at OVW. I was the announcer before Jimmy got there. When Jimmy got there, the first thing he did was fire me from the announcer's position because he had the power to do so because they had signed that WWE developmental agreement. So it was within his power to do so. Jimmy wanted to be the announcer. Well, I thought I was a pretty strong color man with Dean Hill, and I thought Dean and I worked pretty good together. And with Jimmy at the broadcast booth, I felt it was 2 play-by-play guys. And I didn't like it. I wanted to be the announcer. But that just... what that did for me is it gave me the opportunity to create Bowling Services, because if Jimmy had not fired me from the announcing booth, and he said, if you want to be a part of this show, bring talented wrestlers to it. Well, that's what I did. I went out, formed the company Bowling Services, and they knew I had a fair amount of experience around the wrestling business, and knew that I knew quite a bit about it, and knew that I had the pull to be able to get them on television, on the OVW television shows. So the first one I ever signed was Mr. Black. That went on to Mr. Crony. That went to signing Bull Buchanan, and then I believe after that we got Mark Henry, and so I had a pretty good stable right there already, and then of course eventually that led to the John Cenas, the Ricos, the Sean O'Hares, the Bobby Lashleys, the Lance Cades, many, many others. I think we've had a total of 36 wrestlers in Bowling Services that advanced onto the WWE. But those were the cream of the crop. At one time, not to interrupt you, Bowling Services nearly held all the world titles in the WWE. You had Bobby Lashley as the world champion of ECW. You had John Cena as the champion of WWE. And then the world champion was when Mark Henry was feuding with Goldberg. And had Mark Henry not got injured, I have no doubt he would have been the world champion of SmackDown. And then all three world titles would have been held by Bowling Services. And that would have been pretty impressive. So as far as I'm concerned, that was probably about as good a run as one manager can have with his wrestlers that we created here.
What are your thoughts on is Nick Dinsmore still the trainer for the beginners class?
To my knowledge, he is. I don't see a whole lot of the beginners class, but to my knowledge, Nick is still the trainer of the beginners class, and plus he is the current OVW champion on OVW television, and he's been traveling. I've been a little critical of him. He's been traveling all over the world since he got here. He's been to Ireland and Portugal, and I think I heard he's got a Japan and an England tour coming up, and I've been a little critical of him. I told him there was plenty of good talent right here in the Louisville in the Kentucky tri-state area, right here in Louisville, Kentucky, and I felt he ought to be here defending the belt here a little bit. But I'm sure he gets big paydays to go to these other foreign cities, and he said the OVW title is fairly well respected all around the world, and I guess he's doing what's good for his pocket, I guess.
What are your thoughts on...
As long as he defends it here every 30 days, he's under his contractual obligations.
What are your thoughts on Nick Dinsmore, other than what you've already went into?
Well, Nick is probably one of the more solid wrestling technicians we've ever had. Nick is also a former member of Bowling Services. Rob Conway is a three-time member of Bowling Services, the only three-time member I ever had. Some people correct me and say, well, Mark Henry. Well, Mark Henry never really went away. You know, it's just me and Mark would have our disagreements every now and then, and he would disappear for a while, but he was never really actually fired and rehired by Bowling Services. He was kind of always with us, just sometimes in good standing, sometimes not. But as far as a technical wrestler goes, you're probably there's not any that are better than Nick Dinsmore. And if you want to learn technical wrestling, he is best suited for the beginner class because that's where you need to learn that style of wrestling at. And he does a fine job. Everybody that I know that's been to his training classes said he's heads and shoulders above anyone else they've been trained by.
Mm-hmm. Well, the Christmas Chaos match with Chris Benoit was probably next to the blow-off match of the Bashams, the
mm-hmm.
best OVW match that I've ever seen.
That was pretty solid. I was on the card that night and was backstage and did not get to see a lot of that match, but I did see a lot of the highlights on it on video, and from everybody I talked to that saw it, that they still talk about it to this day as being one of the better wrestling matches they'd ever seen.
Mm-hmm.
No one got caught on fire. No one did anything off a 40-foot ladder. Nobody got hit by a bus or a car to start the match, but as far as a technical wrestling match, that's probably going to be one of the best.
No. Yeah. Okay. Are we on still, Alex?
I am.
Okay. Kenny? Ken? Okay, I think we lost Kenny. Kenny Boland should be calling right back in. Well, Alex, you'll be seeing those the OVW stuff very soon. You're going to be very impressed with the product from 2003, especially the blow off between the Damage and Doug Basham when they had to leave OVW to go to SmackDown to be a tag team as brothers. And you'll see how Cornette wrote the segments and stuff to, you know, bring the story to an end and whatnot. But yeah, that's good stuff. And plus, you know, I mean, it was a wrestling feud, you know, where it was, I mean, sure they had sneak attacks. They had some cheating and whatever, but they also wrestled and it was solid wrestling.
But we do have Kenny Bolin back on the line. All right, Ken.
Man, technical difficulties blowing through here. We got bad thunderstorms and tornadoes heading this way, and something knocked us out there for a minute, but we're back up and running.
Actually, I think Corny just passed gas, but
well, that he only lives about 5 miles from here. That's a good possibility.
Okay, Alex, as you were, sir.
All righty, getting back. Okay, we're back on the real phone now. How's that?
That's good.
All righty.
Okay, so we mentioned two great matches right there, Doug Basham and Damaja, and then Ted Traylor and Brian Alvarez. What are some other matches that Ohio Valley's had that's really stuck out in your mind?
Well, one of my favorites I was ever a part of is when we were the last dark match at Freedom Hall on a Monday Night Raw card, which featured Rico and John Cena against Brock Lesnar and Shelton Benjamin. And we went into that match the champions. We did not emerge victorious in that one, but it was one heck of a match. I remember that the crowd response was equivalent to that of most any other match that was on that card, and especially when Brock Lesnar did the that 450 shooting star that he does. That got like 3 or 4 replays on the Titantron, which never happens on a dark match. And it went so well, we went back to the dressing room and thinking our night was over, and the crowd loved it so much, and plus the next people that were supposed to be going to the ring were not ready, and they wanted us to go back out and do it again and challenge them to a rematch right there. But just as we was getting ready to go back out, me and Rico were getting ready to head back down and challenge Brock and Shelton to come back out, the people that were supposed to be in the next match got ready and it wasn't so much a match, it was just some type of entertainment that was going to go on before Raw. And that entertainment wasn't ready to go yet. So we were looking forward to going out there and doing it again. It was a fantastic match. Nearly 18,000 people at Freedom Hall for that. And probably one of the better tag matches I was certainly ever a part of. But when you got Rico and Cena in there to manage, kind of hard to go wrong. And, of course, Brock and Shelton's going to give you 100% regardless. The Minnesota Stretching Crew—they were known as back then.
Yeah, they were an exceptional team. They were really good, and I do remember seeing the match. And when I saw that shooting star, I was like, wait a minute, this isn't right. A man that size, 280 at least.
Yeah,
at least.
Every bit of.
And then some, and it's just amazing. Do you follow mixed martial arts at all?
Pardon, run it by me again.
Do you follow mixed martial arts at all, UFC?
Here recently I did. As a matter of fact, Cornette is a huge fan of the MMA. And he invited me over to his home here recently to watch the Brock Lesnar fight. And, I've had a lot of personal differences with Brock Lesnar over the years. We've feuded with each other for a long time, and I'm not pulling any secrets here. Brock and I just flat didn't get along. We didn't see things eye to eye. He left here hating me. I've never really spoke extremely high of him, and we just didn't get along good. We just didn't see things eye to eye. So I went there to see him get beat in his MMA fight. But I got to admit, he got off to a heck of a start and was doing a good job. I thought for his first or second match there, however many that was, that he was doing a good job, but he kind of slipped up and his ankle got in the other guy's hands there, and it was all over at that point. But no hidden secrets between me and Brock Lesnar. He and I just didn't click too well.
He's going to be a major UFC star. He's just got the raw talent.
Well, I'll agree with you. The raw talent's there, and if there's anybody who's got the tenacity to make it in that sport. And you can't tell Brock he's not good at anything. Anybody that had the guts to try to play in the NFL and to play professional football and with not really having much of any of a football background. And he was convinced he was going to make it with the Minnesota Vikings and start. And I wasn't going to bet against him because there ain't been a whole lot put in front of him that he wasn't able to accomplish. So now, Brock, you can say what you want about Brock Lesnar. If he puts his mind to something, he's normally going to succeed at it. I will give him that.
Yeah.
How were when Ohio Valley had people that were paid to train the developmental guys, how were they as leaders?
Give me a reference of what you're speaking of as to who.
Well, I'm not speaking of anyone in particular. That is an extremely broad question. But
well, if you're asking who my favorite trainers were, remember.
Yeah. Well, I'm speaking of the dynamic between the guys who are paid to train there.
Oh,
and the
okay.
Guys
you're,
who
so you're not speaking of like of an Al Snow or a Lance Storm
or something
like that. You mean people that stepped up in the locker room and proclaimed themselves, or were assigned to be locker room generals.
Yes, sir.
Is that your question?
Yes, sir.
One person who proclaimed himself as a locker room general later in the OVW WWE era was Tom Coe, and Tom Coe was a big intimidating guy. But in my personal opinion, Tom Coe had not really been around that locker room enough, because we still had guys like Nick Densmore and Rob Conway, people that had been with us 7 or 8 years that were still around at that time. And to me, longevity and knowing the right ways to do business, knowing how the wrestling business is to be run, those are your locker room generals, those that know what locker room etiquette's about, those that know to get up out of a chair if you've been there in the company 6 weeks and there's a guy that's been there for 6 years that's standing. You know, just the common decency and common sense knowledge of what to do in a locker room. And I just felt Brett at that time had kind of stepped up before his time. You know, we still had others there that were more established.
Well, you did mention Tom Coe.
Never mind. Brett Tom Coe was a baseball player that I knew for the
Cincinnati
Reds.
And he was
because I'm also a big Reds fan, and I do a lot with the Riverbats here, and I get to know a lot of their players before they go on to Cincinnati. And Brett Tom Coe was one of the ones I liked. I just realized I just called Tom Coe Brett. So
that big tattooed sucker
down in TNA.
Yeah. Well, we mentioned him. Tom Coe, I think, is the most improved guy that I have seen, and I credit that with his touring for New Japan Pro Wrestling.
I'm going to go along with you on that. I do watch TNA because of Jimmy being down there, and I'll watch any wrestling that's good. I don't care if it's ours, WWE's, or what have you. If I'm entertained by the show, I'll watch it. And I have to agree. I think Tom Coe has come a long way from where he was when he was here at OVW as to where he is now. And they say the sky's the limit for him. He really has a heck of an opportunity down there. And I guess big muscle bound guys I've never really gotten along with. Me and Tom Coe didn't get along too good here either. But you know, fat, mouthy manager as opposed to big, jacked-up, muscle-bound wrestler. You know, we just come from two different worlds anyway. So, but no, but I'll, you know, whether I like him or not, I'll tell you what I think about him. And I think Tom Coe's doing a great job down there. And
yeah,
it takes a lot to make me say that.
And the thing is, though, in New
not,
Japan,
not Brett Tom Coe. We're talking about Tom Coe, the tattooed-up, big, muscle-bound wrestler.
Like it stinks. But it took Tom Coe getting nailed a couple times in New Japan. And, you know, he wouldn't be where he is if he didn't take that chance and go on the tours. That's the problem nowadays. Guys don't want to go around and train with different people. They don't want to work with different
people.
Well,
you're only going to get better if you work with people that are at least as good as or better than you. And you can stay in a territory for 10 years, and if you're only working talent that's far less experienced than you, then how much better are you going to get? And then when you do step in the ring with someone who's got 5 years, 10 years experience on you, or has been working with people that are far more talented than you, then you're not going to look so good. So, yeah, I would say he did things the right way there.
Now, since we brought it up earlier, who has
Brett
been
Tom Coe. You want to talk about Brett Tom Coe, right? Hell of a pitcher.
At least he's a red, not as a giant.
The Giants can keep with the Tom Coe they got now.
No.
Who have been some of your favorite trainers that have come through there, and then who are some guys that you may have not liked so much?
Favorite trainer probably would be Dr. Tom Pritchard. No offense to Al Snow, but Dr. Tom goes back to the old Smoky Mountain wrestling days. with the Heavenly Bodies, and Doc and I have been very close over the years, and we've been known to tell each other like it is. You know, if he's got something to say, he'll say it to me. If I ever had something to say, I'd say it to him. And I've got a lot of respect for Dr. Tom, and in my opinion, that is the best thing that Florida wrestling's got going for it right now, is having Tomko. I'm tired of talking about Tomko. Dr. Tom, too many Toms and Tomkos floating around here. Dr. Tom in Florida is the best thing they got going. Steve Kern's a quality guy down there as well. And, of course, they're going to have Timmy Baltimore to the broadcast team. I don't know who the broadcast team is down there right now, but I guess Timmy Baltimore will probably be the anchor of it. And it seemed like that was a multiple-part question. Have I answered all of it? Oh, who I didn't like. Well, see, I liked Dr. Tom. Al Snow and I have been very close since he's been here. Loved Al Snow. Greg Gagne, when he was down here, I loved Greg. He was a great guy. People that I didn't like. Trainers, you're saying, huh? Well, me and Heyman. Heyman wasn't really a trainer. Heyman was. Heyman. I don't know what he did. Let's put it this way.
Very little.
Heyman and I just probably didn't see eye to eye on a whole lot of things. I think we more or less tolerated each other, to be honest with you. He claimed that he was a Kenny Boland fan, but I don't know. I don't think I was his cup of tea, and he probably wouldn't mind. And he's off doing other things right now. And it's like I've told everybody there that ever came through that didn't like me. Well, it don't matter, because once you leave, I'll still be here. So, and for 11 years, that's pretty much been the case. So it doesn't matter whether they like me or not, you know. I'll be here when you're gone.
A lot of people used to think I only
had this job because of Jim Cornette. Well, what they got to remember, I was here 3 years before Jimmy got here, and I've been here just about 3 years since he left. So I don't think Jimmy's got a whole lot to do with my longevity in OVW.
What were some of your thoughts on how Greg Gagne was handled and treated in his stint in World Wrestling Entertainment?
I really don't know a whole lot about the inner workings. My opinion is that Greg Gagne was probably too nice a guy to be a trainer. Greg didn't want to see any bad in anybody. He didn't want to see anything negative. He is just now he would tell you like it is from time to time. You could get him riled up, and if you really just weren't putting out the effort, he'd get on you. But Greg was almost just too nice a guy to be a trainer. Al Snow. He can be nice, but he can also cut you to threads, too, if he realizes you're jacking around. Dr. Tom, very much the same way. Nicest guy in the world, but start jacking around and wasting his time, and he'll certainly let you know about it. And, of course, our resident genius here, the hustler Rip Rogers, I mean, in my opinion, and I've talked about it with many people, he's a bit unorthodox in his approach and his style, but there's not really a better trainer anywhere than Rip Rogers. If you want to learn how to be a professional wrestler, Rip Rogers is the guy that can teach you how to get there. And he can teach anybody. I talk about it like baseball. Some wrestlers are so good at what they do, they don't understand why they're good at it. And they don't understand how it works. Pete Rose was a great player, but only considered average as a manager. There have been other great players, your Hank Aarons, your Johnny Benches, people like that have never managed. And why? Well, they just, you know, they knew how to motivate themselves. They just don't know how to motivate others. And Rip Rogers has been good really with everyone he's ever gotten his hands on. I mean, if you really have a desire to learn pro wrestling, Rip will get it out of you. And if you don't, he'll filter that out too, and he will not let you waste his time. He doesn't care if you got $2,000 in your pocket to join his class. If you're going to be a waste of time and a disruption, and you're not serious about it, he'll send you on your way, and you can shove your $2,000 up your anal orifice.
Well, there you go.
Next question.
Wow. I'm speechless.
I guess you can say anal orifice on this radio station here, can't you?
Yes, sir.
All right, just checking.
I'm at a loss. Alex, you're going to have to cover me. Jeez.
Well, we got 13 minutes to fill here. What you got on your mind?
So Is it pretty much – how much involvement did Rip have with the developmental talent? Because someone of that blunt, honestly – because I've listened to a couple of Rip interviews that he's done, and then he seems like the type of guy that they wouldn't really allow to be around the developmental guys.
I don't know exactly a whole lot of what happened there. I do know that there was a little bit of bad blood between Rip and the WWE. Exactly what it stemmed from. We have had our way of doing business here and doing things, and you gotta remember we're real old school here, and WWE is not, and our way of doing business and our way of thinking and our philosophy, and I say our because I think that me and Rip Rogers and Jimmy Cornette and Danny Davis, we've been the anchors of OVW for a long time, and we have our way of doing business. And WWE has their ways. And I think Rip Rogers and Jimmy Cornette both had a very difficult time being told how to do what they knew that they were successful at. Jimmy Cornette was very good at what he does. There is not a better booker of wrestling talent than Jimmy Cornette. Jimmy knows how to book a television show. There's not a better trainer than Rip Rogers. So who is it that's going to come and tell them how to do their jobs? Well, neither one of them cared too much for it, so... I think, in my own personal opinion, that had a lot to do with the bad blood between WWE, because WWE don't like to, they don't like to be told no. And, if you're used to saying no, you're probably not going to get along with the WWE too long. Once again, my own personal opinion.
So,
treading that water as lightly as I can.
Good answer. So the current crop of the young lions of Derby City and OVW, who do you see as a breakout star?
In Derby City, who I think's got a tremendous potential based upon his look and his attitude and his intensity, I would tell you to look out for the Big Cat. 4 months ago, I don't know if I'd have told you that, but he has really come a long way in the last 4 months. We have a young wrestler named Sergio who's got a good look. He's not the tallest guy in the world, but he's got a good look and he's fallen in love with the Sunset Flip for some reason. I'm not sure what that's about, but I guess we all got to have a finishing move, and his right now is the Sunset Flip. On OVW, I would say look out for let me get some names in my head here.
Jamin Oliveris.
Jamin does one hell of a job. He's got one thing going against him, that's his size. When it comes to intensity and having a love and a passion for the wrestling business, you're not going to find anybody that loves it any more than Jamin. He is stuck
with
his thick and thin.
You can tell. And with his work, he has that fire.
You
can tell he loves what he's doing.
My personal opinion, Jamin Olivencia ought to have a contract, and he should have had one at least 6 months ago, maybe even longer than that. Let's see where that plays out. No, he's not the biggest guy in the world, but neither is Rey Mysterio. And who's more popular on WWE than Rey Mysterio? And I think Jamin has the ability to win fans over anywhere he goes. And hopefully, somebody will wake up one day and see that he needs to be a part of that roster. He's been here for the better part of, I guess, about 3 years now. And he never misses a show, never misses a training. I think his home is up near Niagara Falls. He does not get a whole lot of home time. He does one hell of a job. I appreciate you guys noticing that out of him. Bravado certainly has the size and the intensity. Might wish he were a little taller. Well, hell, not everybody's 6'6". Not everybody's 7 feet tall. And not everybody, looks exactly alike. But he's got the tools. Let's say that. He's got the tools, and I think if he continues in the direction he's going in, he's another one that I think's got an excellent shot at getting the contract. Him and Jamin are two entirely different products, but I think both would be good additions. I don't think Bravado's there yet, but he can get there. Jamin, in my opinion, ought to already have a contract with somebody.
Yes, I completely agree. He's just really fun to watch, and you can tell he's out there. He's given 110. The fans just love him to death. And honestly, I don't know why he's not signed.
I got to correct myself. I said 36 men had had advanced from Bowling Services onto the WWE. Why lie? Justin Oxlade-Rose just made his appearance on ECW the other day, so that makes it 37.
37 it is.
Another Bowling Services member who has marched on and made his way to the WWE, and now he needs to make $1 million and ship some back home to Papa. That's what he needs to do.
Well, on that note, Mr. Bowling, it was definitely our pleasure to have you on again.
Well, of course it was.
Of course it was.
Even though I was 2 minutes late.
Well, that's all right. That's okay.
Anything else I can do for you fellas?
I think that should do it. What we're going to do is we're going to wrap up our show. Any last plugs that you'd like to get in there?
Well, certainly for any of the listeners out there that have an interest in OVW, or if you like any of the old shows that I've been a part of since 1999 through 2000 and early 2008, you can get those at KennyBolin.com. Once again, that's KennyBolin, BOLIN.com. You can find me on MySpace at /KennyBolin. And I also have a new DVD out called Memphis Classic Wrestling. It's a 3-DVD set with all the greats from 74 to 80, featuring the fabulous Jackie Fargo, Jerry the King Lawler, Bill Dundee, all the greats that are on there from that era. And it's a 3-disc set that I sell for $29.95 at KennyBolin.com.
Awesome. Awesome. Go OV. Wrestling.com.
Oh, and the OVW DVDs I've been on, those are $19.95.
Right. And those are for, there's two, so it's four shows?
Mm-hmm. Four to five, depending on the month.
Right. Awesome, awesome. Well, thanks again, King, for coming on. It was our pleasure.
Well, we'll do it again sometime. Do it again sometime when I'm not so sick.
There you go. All right, now you get off the phone and go drink some tea, brother, and you take it
Sounds like a good idea. I appreciate the medical advice, and we'll talk to you guys again real soon.
All right, brother. Thanks for coming
Have a good
on
one,
guys.
Fellas.
All right.
Bye-bye.
All right. Okay, Alexander. Now, that was the 50th show, brother. That was fun.
Yeah, it was fun. It was a good show.
Very, very good. I would like to thank our guests. Scrap Iron Adam Pierce and King Kenny Boland for coming on the 50th show. It was fun stuff. Alex, we have about 2 minutes to go, so I'm going to give you the office to get in your plugs.
www.myspace.com/CMSaint. You can find out what's going on with me. Not much, but you can find out. You can whatever. And then www.newwaveprowrestling.com. We got a big show coming May 3rd. If you're in the San Diego area, if you live in California, just come out to the show. And I think you might have a good time. It might be kind of fun. And that's about it for me.
Awesome. Well, we have under a minute to go, so I'm going to cut you off and I'll run off the rest of the plugs. I will talk to you on Tuesday.
All right, then. Bye-bye.
All right, baby. Okay, listeners of Rubber Guard Radio, we survived our 50th episode. Unbelievable. Two great interviews with two great men. Well, what we're going to do is we're going to wrap it up here. You can get us on MySpace, myspace.com/Rubber Guard Radio. If you're a fan, if you're a worker, referee, promoter, if you want to come on the show, hit us with a message and we'll gladly get you on. You can also check out our website, rubberguardradio.com, where we have columnists that, write columns and whatnot. We also archive all of our shows. And don't forget our sponsors, WrestleWarehouse.com for all your wrestling DVD needs, and FogCityWrestling.com, which has a show in 2 days, April 12th, this Saturday night. There's only a few tickets remaining, so doors open at 6, bell time's at 7. I suggest you get there at 5. Come by, say hi to KZ. I'll be the idiot running around with the Rubber Guard Radio press pass and Rubber Guard Radio t-shirt. So come on out, check out some quality wrestling. The main event is Mr. Prime Time against the Black Pearl, which
in a no DQ match, which should be insane. They're going to be all over the place. We have a couple seconds left. Big ups. Congratulations tonight there, David Fuller. I heard you guys kick some ass at your IHW banquet. And also, ACW Mark, that first segment was for you, brother.
Blog Talk Radio.